Okay, so good evening, everyone. So tonight is the 11th Shokshu, entitled The Definition of Key. And that's the most common question we get asked, right? When people want to know, well, what is key? And students, even students who've been training for years, sometimes ask me, what exactly is key? Well, Toi Sensei put this together, and in the Shokshu, which would offer, as he says, a definition of ki, or whoever translated it said a definition of ki. So let me first read from the Shokshu book, number 11, the definition of ki. We begin with a number one in counting all things. It is impossible that this one can ever be reduced to zero. Because just as something cannot be made from nothing, one cannot be made from zero. Ki is like the number one. Ki is formed from infinitely small particles, smaller than an atom. The universal ki condensed becomes an individual, which further condensed becomes the one point in the lower abdomen, which in turn infinitely condensed never becomes zero, but becomes one with the universe. Thus we understand the definition of ki. Interesting. So the literal translation, the essence of ki, we begin with the number one in counting all things. It is impossible that this one, even reduced to infinitely small particles, can ever become zero. Because just as something cannot be made from nothing, one can never arise from zero. Universal ki is the infinite gathering of infinitely small particles. This universal key condensed becomes an individual, which further condensed becomes the one point in the lower abdomen, which in turn infinitely condensed never becomes zero. In this way, we are one with the universe. Thus, we realize the essence of key. To begin with, it has some fundamental differences, but to begin with, the title is not the definition of key. In Japanese, the title is the essence of key, which to me makes a big difference. And why they called it the definition of ki, I can only guess that somebody felt, because that question get asked so much, maybe they'll call it the definition. But it's not quite a definition. The first sentence is very similar. We begin with the number one in counting all things. Second sentence, it is impossible that this one can even reduce to infinitely small particles can ever become zero, which is different. It is impossible that this one can ever be reduced to zero. It literally says it is impossible that this one, even reduced to infinitely small particles, could ever become zero, which is different. Then number three, it says, because just as something cannot be made from nothing, one can never arise from zero. The Shokshu book says, because just as something cannot be made from nothing, one cannot be made from zero. Not that much different. Then in the Shokshu book it says, ki is like the number one. Ki is formed from infinitely small particles smaller than an atom. But it literally says, universal ki is the infinite gathering of infinitely small particles. Then the next sentence is almost the same. This universal ki condensed becomes an individual, which further condensed becomes the one point in the lower abdomen, which in turn infinitely condensed never becomes zero, period. In the Shokshu book it says never becomes zero but becomes one with the universe. The subject of that sentence is ki. Ki is already one with the universe. So this is incorrect sentence, because it says that ki then becomes one with the universe. No, what it means is, what it says in Japanese, is that's how we become one with the universe, not how ki becomes one with the universe. So that's an incorrect translation. So in the book it says, in this way, we are one with the universe. And then the last sentence is, thus we realize the essence of ki. And the Shokshu book says, thus we understand the definition of ki. So some of these differences are important. Again, not that we want to necessarily change the Shokshu. the way the Shokshu is written. But again, as I've said before, I want to hold these discussions and do this translating for us so that we get a clearer understanding of what Choi Sensei is trying to say. This is very easily misunderstood. Now, Sayaka, could you read the Japanese, please?
Juichi, Kino Honshitsu, Subete, Mono Hakaru Niwa, Ichio Motte Hajime Tosu, Kore o Mugen ni Shuyaku Shitemo, Tsui Niwa Zero to wa Naranai, Zero Yori Ichiwa Shouji Enai Kara de Aru, Kono Mugen ni Shou Naru Mono no Mugen no Shugo Tai o Soushou Shiteki Toyu, Tenchi no Ki o Shuyaku Shita Mono ga Ware de Ari, さらに集約して成果の一点となり、さらに無限に集約してとどまるとこなきところ、初めて天地と一体となり、気の本質を体得しうるのである。
Thank you. Always beautiful. Choi Sensei uses this Shokshu.To try to point out to us the nature of what he calls ki. Ki, to Choi Sensei, is like code for that which can't be known, or that which can't be spoken, or the infinite, the inconceivable. This is what ki means to him. Like, everything in the relative world is measurable and has a limit until you look really close at it. And then it becomes infinitely small and you can't measure it. And you lose...any way to define it. Same thing if you look out into space. It's all measurable until you keep going, and then it becomes immeasurable and unknowable. Infinite, we say, or inconceivable. So the shift that happens between that which is measurable and knowable to that which is immeasurable and unknowable is what Choi Sensei calls the difference between shoga and taiga, or relative world and absolute. So, ki is his code word for the absolute in this sense. So, ki is everything. It's like sometimes you hear, someone say the teacher has a strong ki. Toi Sensei has a very strong ki. Or Suzuki Sensei has a really strong ki.Well, that's a relative thing you're saying. So that's not quite right. A person that is trained a lot may be experiencing this unknowable essence on a higher level or a more profound level or more intense level than others who haven't trained so much. And it might appear then that person has somehowowns a bigger section, a bigger part of ki. But it's not that at all. Ki is everything. Choi Sensei is saying everything is made of ki, whether it's in the shoga world or the taiga world. It's just that we don't experience it in the relative world. We only experience it in the taiga, in the infinite. Until we reach that edge, that shift in our consciousness doesn't happen. When you look out there,into space, beyond what you can measure, just looking, a shift happens. It changes the way, your mind state. And that change, that shift, is what Choi Sensei calls extending ki or keeping one point. It changes your experience from just experiencing the relative condition to experiencing everything.Even though the shoga world is part of taiga, so that everything, your emotions, your thoughts, your senses, the objects of your senses, everything that you know is made of ki. That's what Choi Sensei is saying. Everything that you know is made of ki. Only when you look really, really, really closely at it, you experience ki. In other words, you experience the indefinable.It loses its ability to be measured and categorized. Obviously very difficult to talk about, because when I use words, those are all definable. I have no words that are indefinable, except words like infinite, you know, which point to something. So for each of us, it helps to talk about it for Toi Sensei to attempt to define it so that we have something to work with. But for each of us, it requires our actual experiencing of this shift, which we most easily can experience in key meditation or key breathing. But once we get sort of the knack of this shift, of seeing things infinitely into things, seeing the big picture, let's say, then we can carry it into everyday life. And then our experience of everyday life becomes much, much more inclusive and less exclusive. We stop taking a position on this side or this side of something, realizing that it's just relative. And there's a much bigger consideration. As long as you're choosing one side over another, then you give up your ability to experience the shift. Only when you see both sides together can you experience the shift. Only when you see everything all together do you experience the shift. And again, Toi Sensei calls that the four basic principles. These are the four ways to come upon this shift, this infinite key, this unification, where nothing is separate and everything is unified. Keep one point, relax completely, keep weight underside, extend key. These are the four basic principles that we can follow, and each of them creates this shift in us, this change of our state of mind, so that we're seeing it from a much, much, much bigger perspective, a more inclusive perspective, not so limited. Really was evident when you saw Toi Sensei doing Aikido, because there's everybody who, particularly if he was doing a demonstration, people would try to hold him. People would try to trick him. People would come from the audience and try to do things. And he was always somewhere else. He always had an infinite number of possibilities to do. You could see he never got stuck. So surely you understand, and when you're practicing in the dojo, sometimes you want to move a certain way, and you get stuck, and you don't know what to do. And Toi Sensei says, yeah, that's because you're looking at it relatively. You're limiting your view. But in fact, you can go anywhere and do anything. And he demonstrated that all the time. So that's the value of having the actual physical technique experience. So this just isn't some kind of an idea. This is something you can practice and get in your body and experience. And as you sit more, if you do sit, then this also is a similar experience. You begin to have a deeper and deeper appreciation of and experiential bonding with this key of the universe, this unknowable, or in other words, this shift happens more easily for you. And then and you can not only use it in the dojo for passing a key test or training with another person, but you can use it in your daily life all the time, whenever there's some challenge, which is often. Okay, so maybe you have some questions.
I have one. And this stems from an earlier conversation that I had with you, but I have always had trouble with the use of particles in describing ki, because to me, when you say particle, I think matter or something.
And
so that's always been a difficult explanation, and the translation that is read is much easier than that, but
maybe still not sufficient.
Well, there's still the use of particles, which to me indicates that there is something, and
well, you know, think of physics. The physicists tell us that when you get down to what we call particles, and smaller and smaller and smaller, at a certain point, and I'm not a physicist, so maybe I can't tell you this exactly, but at a certain point, the physicists tell us that we can no longer tell the difference between particle and wave, or matter and energy. It depends on how what you're looking for, how it will appear. But there's no clear distinction when you get down to microscopic parts, whether it's energy or whether it's matter. So this, because we understand matter relative to our senses. That's how we experience matter. That's how our understanding of matter arises. You fall down, bump your head when you're a little kid. That's matter. Both your head and the hard floor. So you learn what is matter through your senses. But so this Tohei Sensei's point is, when you look very, 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 very closely at something, the nature of it changes completely. You know, I mean, even a physicist will tell you that this table right here is 99 9/10% space. It's just open space. If you look at the nucleus of an atom and say it's the size of my fist, for comparison, if it were the size of my fist, the nearest electron would be 300 yards away. And that's the only so-called matter that there is the nucleus and the electron. Other than that, there's nothing. It's space. You should be able to put your finger right through that table. But you can't do it. So our senses define for us how we perceive the nature of matter, the nature of the world we live in. But we have all these experiences that transcend these senses, and which we come upon through intense practice of one kind or another, misogi practice. We have these experiences where we seem to be free of this limitation. Maybe not to the point where we can walk through walls, but we experience the world in a completely different way. Very very much more energetically than matter. And Tohei Sensei says that's when we're experiencing the essence of ki, which cannot be defined as one thing or another, but is beyond that. So, I understand your hesitancy about the word particle, but think of it as Tohei Sensei trying to find a word for an infinite part of something, which is no longer a thing. Because at that infinitely small state, we already know from physicists that it's no longer matter.
Or like, with the particles you can measure and count, whereas ki is something that is not measurable or...
Yeah, and I think that's, what, again, as we look closer and closer and closer, we lose our ability to define it and count it and pin it down. It starts doing strange things. If you change something in a particle over here, it changes something in a similar particle over there somewhere. We lose all the sort of logical definitions that we use for everyday life. And it's mysterious, and we don't need to be physicists here. We don't need to figure anything out. We just need to know that, which we already know from our practice, that our senses are often fooling us into thinking that we are limited and are unable to move in some area where actually we can, if we let go of that limited way of thinking and keep one point, so that shift happens and we see things inclusively, then we can move. Then we have options in our life. Then we have we see the opportunities everywhere instead of seeing, I can't go there, I can't go there, I can't go there, I can't go there. So this creates a tremendous sense of freedom and joy in everyday living, let alone on the mat. So I think it's an important discussion to have, and Yeah, I just, for instance, received an email from a teacher on Oahu who was reporting something that one of his students had spoken to him about, which indicated that the student had a pretty profound misunderstanding of the teaching of Aikido. And I took this personally in a way and said, oh, this is my student, it's his student, but it's my student. I'm the chief instructor of Hawaii Ki Federation. How is it that after 10, 11, 12 years, 13 years of teaching, I can still have a student out there that has such a fundamental misunderstanding of what it is we're practicing? Well, it's very difficult. And I mean, when I was training with Suzuki Sensei and with Toi Sensei, it had to be repeated to me over and over and over and over. And sometimes it's easy to forget that Suzuki Sensei used to say, our brain is like a sieve, you know? And you have to keep putting it in over and over and over until it starts to stick to the sides and fill up the holes. And then pretty soon you get it. Pretty soon it fills in the holes in your brain and you get it. But it takes a lot of material in there before it doesn't fall through anymore. So he was trying to express that to me. I thought of that when I read this thing from the student and felt, oh, why the student doesn't get this? Well, this fundamental way of seeing is, and even for me, is very, very difficult to express to you. And which is why I want to have these discussion groups, so that you have a chance to ask questions about what it is that I'm saying. I may be experiencing it, but as Toi Sensei was clearly experiencing it, but not so easy even for Toi Sensei to express. And he was speaking Japanese, and so he had somebody translate it into English, and that person maybe wasn't as clear. So that's why we need to look at the original writing. And as you know, Sayaka helps me translate it so I can find in there some of the juice that went into it. And sometimes it's lost in the translation. Okay?
Thanks.
Many of you are teachers, so I know your students want to know.
Okay. What I'm curious about is in that shokushu, they stress the idea of ki not being able to, you know, become nothing. And it's mentioned several times. I'm kind of curious why that's being highlighted, that concept of ki becoming nothing.
Okay. I mentioned Toi Sensei is working with finite words and concepts to try to point us to this shift I was talking about. Point us to the nature of it, the essence of this thing he calls ki, which is everywhere. It's what makes up everything. It's not evident to our senses. But when you either look infinitely large to infinity in space, or you look infinitely small as things become smaller, 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 on and on and on and on. At some point, it registers with us, oh, that's beyond knowing. I don't think that it's so important that, you know, I was going to say, I don't think it's so important that he's saying there's no such thing as zero. Except that some people in this kind of a practice might have become nihilistic. When you're sitting, for instance, in meditation sometimes, if you've sat a lot for years and years and years and years, you have an experience of emptiness. there doesn't seem to be any person home. There doesn't seem to be anything. There's just this sense of complete, vast, open, free of anything, emptiness. But you, the experience of this is incredibly intense. But intellectually, you might look at that and think, oh, well, there's nothing then, nihilism. But actually, that nothing is not no nothing. It's no thing, but it's not nothing. It's filled with ki. That's what you're experiencing. So I'm struggling around using the word ki is something. Because it's not exactly a thing. Because it can't be perceived on thing level. Does this help, or is this confusing? What troubles you about when you split something in half, no matter how many times you split it in half, you never get to zero?
I wouldn't say I'm troubled by it. I'm just curious, like, if that's something that comes up or something that people might have a question about. It's just mentioned maybe two or three times in that passage. And I'm thinking there must be a reason why, you know, that's being highlighted.
Well, for instance, he says, the universal key condensed becomes the individual, which in turn further condensed becomes the one point in the lower abdomen, which in turn infinitely condensed never becomes zero, but continues half, 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 half. So I don't know if this is sufficient intellectual explanation, but if you practice that half, 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 you will continually experience this intense growing feeling, which we call ki. If you stop that and allow it to become nothing, that feeling disappears. Ki, in that sense, disappears. So what Toi Sensei is always pointing to is the experience he's having. He's trying to find with his shokshu different ways to help us have the experience he's having. So just listening, reading this, and trying to understand it intellectually is not nearly enough. You have to actually do the practice. And then you see for yourself, oh, I see what he means. Yeah, if I let that go and become nothing, it dies. So by infinitely allowing it to continue, it never becomes zero, but continue on and on infinitely, half, 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 half. It becomes more and more and more intense. That's something you experience in key breathing and key meditation. So let's do more of that, and you can have the experience of that.
Okay.
Okay.
Sensei, what's the relation between ki and kokyu?
Good question. So when we say kokyu, that literally means breath. Or when Toi Sensei would say sono kokyu da, like that's kokyu right there. He means that's breath power, the power of breath. So what is the power of breath? The power of breath, as you practice key breathing, you come upon a tremendous freedom from the fear of death. Because when you're key breathing, you have to give up the idea of gulping in air. And your body, as you start practicing key breathing, is going to tell you, you have to take a breath here. Right? And you start to get intensely worried, and this is the fear of dying. So by mastering breath, by becoming a master of breath, of the breathing, you begin to master this fear. And you access, therefore, a deep level of calmness. And I said before, sometimes we say, oh, Toi Sensei has a lot of ki. We mean he has a lot of kokyu. Means he has access to the experience on a deeper, maybe more inclusive level than we do, or that the students do. You know, we often say the teacher is a certain way, Suzuki Sensei. People always said, oh, Suzuki Sensei, man, I cook you. Well, yeah. But that didn't mean that he owned something that was different than we had. When I first met him, I said, but were you born like this? I mean, with all this incredible intensity? And he said, no, you want to be like this? Keep breathing every day 1 hour. Start tomorrow. That's what he told me. So, you know, because I recognized it and I was intensely drawn to it, to that. Oh, wow, I'd like to be able to experience that. So that's why I asked him, were you born like this or what do I do? Ah, start to keep breathing tomorrow 1 hour every day. So, of course, by mastering the breath, then you become very, very calm and you have access. You allow yourself, this shift takes place, and you allow yourself to experience the intensity of ki that's right now in this moment. Toi Suzuki Sensei would just say, live your life completely. Live the moment completely. You know. But if you're thinking about or reflecting on the moment, then you're dead to the moment. You're just thinking. So that's a very, very shallow. It's not empty, but it's very, very shallow. It's not intense. The more you surrender to whatever is happening without judgment in the moment, the more you experience key of the universe, which is everything. I said before, your thoughts, your feelings, your senses, your object of senses, everything. And when you're experiencing that on a very intense level, Toi Sensei would say, Sono Kokyu da! There is that Kokyu. That is Kokyu. So it means, literally means breath power, but it means your experience of ki is very intense. Sometimes we talk about throwing with kokyu, and people think that means smashing somebody down, but it doesn't at all. It's very relaxed, you know? Suzuki Sensei looked like he was smashing me. Toi Sensei, same thing. He looked like you really were falling hard, but your experience of it is completely different than that.
Thank you, Sensei.
Okay. Sono kokyu da.
Sensei, the definition, both the old and the new, are they're satisfying, and yet to me it's still incomprehensible. Like this, to say, okay, I got it. Now I can explain it to someone. It's just a bit of a conundrum to me. It's more like not so much what, but why, you know. In a way, I just sort of shift from the physics approach to a philosophical approach. Like, what's it all about, you know? Does it have to have some meaning? I guess you could say, I'm just rambling here, but why, or like, well, why not?
He doesn't provide us this for us to try to figure it out, or to get something intellectually. And that's not really what I was asking you. All of Aikido is experiential. It's not intellectual. It's not philosophical, and it ain't physics. It's experiential. Sometimes we use some philosophical conceptions. Sometimes we use some physics ideas or discoveries to point to the nature of this experience and help somebody maybe understand, as I was doing tonight, and maybe help somebody understand what the nature of the experience is. But it's an experience. It's not an idea. And the only way we really get there is by sitting and by practicing on the mat. But it doesn't mean that a discussion about it is unimportant. Because when we have a discussion about it, the misconceptions that we have that hold us back from training freely and openly get dealt with, hopefully. Only if you ask me do they get dealt with. If you don't ask me, if you just go, well, I don't want to tell them that that's what's happening with me or that that's what I'm thinking, because it'll sound stupid or something. But if you don't ask me, then maybe I don't get the chance just to remind you it's experiential, right? Don't worry, nothing to worry about. Just practice.
Thank you, Sensei.
That's what I always end up answering. Right? Because it's, that's really what it's all about.
It's always be.
Yeah, it's always be. Right? David.
Yeah, Sensei, so it's like being in attention, the same as kokyu or extending ki. You know, going back, coming back, coming back, like from meditation. Or like, I just experienced, because Tracy sent out something yesterday from McLeod, and I looked back and it was about being in attention. So I was trying to practice all day to be in attention. But of course I lost. It tangled up in something. Oh wait, be in attention. Is that the same as extending ki? You know, like, okay, get back in attention. And then, I mean, you know, or like meditation, how you try and come back and come. Is it kind of the same or is that different?
Don't really like the same as.
I mean,
without attention, there's no experience of kino kokyu. There's no experience of kokyu. There's no experience of the shift. If you turn your attention to listening very carefully right now, to all the sounds, just that listening creates the shift in you, and in your belly changes the way it feels, right?
Right.
Okay, so that with key meditation, you do that with everything. All of your senses, everything is wide open. That's really being in attention. But even a little bit of attention paid toward one little tiny thing allows you to experience it more openly and more inclusively. Even if it's just one sense or the object of one sense, you know, one thing. Right?
Yeah.
So, to say it's the same as, well...
Baby steps, I guess.
It's very, very important that is our practice.
Yes.
Practicing in attention. If we're not practicing in attention, we're not practicing.
Right. Yeah.
So, but it sounded to me like from what you said you were practicing today, that was a little bit like working at it, trying to make it happen, to pay attention. And I'll admit, in the beginning, sometimes it's going to be like that, that's all. But this is, instead of trying to make something a certain, make yourself be a certain way, sometimes it's just like, just relax, back off a little bit.
Yep.
Just rest. And here's attention.
Yeah.
It comes all by itself.
Right. Because like in the dojo, you experience it more and more different times, like in tests or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Certain times when you come in the front or, you know. And then, but in the other world, the outside world, like I'm trying to think is, you know, baby steps, I guess, is what I'm trying to do. Or experience.
Well, that's fine. We're not in a hurry.
Right.
It's practice. It's not performance. We're just practicing. Everything that life throws at us is another opportunity to practice. Sometimes we practice with it. Sometimes we don't. And the more we practice, the more we'll be able to practice with whatever comes along.
Right.
The less we practice, the less we'll be able to. You know, I mentioned this thing this teacher wrote me about what his student said, and it was something about increasing pleasure and lessening pain, that Aikido increased pleasure and lessened pain. This is a fundamental mistake of the practice. You cannot manipulate the world to make it bring you less pain and more pleasure. Did I say that the right way? No, less pain and more pleasure. You can't do that. You can be in attention so that whether it's pleasurable or painful, you don't react to it and suffer. Suffering is a reaction to what we're given. If it's pleasurable, we suffer because we're afraid it's going to go away and we won't have it anymore. If it's painful, we suffer because we don't want it around us because it's too uncomfortable. So that's the reaction to it, inability to accept whatever is brought to us. So that's the fundamental nature of our practice, to do that in attention at every moment. So that's why when I heard the student say this, I thought, oh, after, how could the student think this after these many years of practice? I don't know how many years, I don't know who it was, I was no name. I don't know whether many years or maybe 6 months of training, I don't know. But that's one of those things that is not easy for us to let go of. Even as you're practicing to stay in attention, you're really trying to get rid of pain and get more pleasure.
No.
You're doing it that way. It's okay. But as you, that's why I said, well, maybe you should just relax a little bit and not work at manipulating things yourself so much.
Yeah.
And just rest and be with whatever is happening. Just be in it and notice.
Yeah.
Right?
Thank you, Sensei.
And there's attention right there. Yes, Lee.
Last question. Sensei, you mentioned earlier that we're all teachers here. And you said also that, you know, essence is more experiential as opposed to intellectual. So we're all teaching at different levels. If you're teaching to youngsters, how would you explain the essence of ki?
How would I explain it? Well, I certainly wouldn't try with youngsters. I would just have a really good time with them, love them with all my heart, and have as much fun as I can with them, and let them experience that kind of attention. Now, if you see a good children's teacher, they're also very strict. Good children's teachers are very strict because they do need to learn to pay attention. And the one thing about kids is they're all over the place, right? So when they learn to pay attention, then it gives them access to deeper level of fun, at true fun and love and appreciation. So really, it's you, and the same thing's true whether you're a teacher of children or a teacher of adults. The important thing of being a teacher is to exhibit what it is that you're talking about, what it is that you're teaching. In other words, you have to be experiencing it when you're teaching it. And kids will really see if you are. They'll respect you. They'll love you if you're having that experience. But if you're trying to figure out how to, you know, like communicate to them in some way, they're going to get bored really soon. You know, and I know you do it. That you've been doing this for a while and you love to do it, right? You like the kids. Yeah. So that's the key. Loving the kids. And making sure they pay attention. Does that help? You don't have to explain anything to children.
There's always going to be the one child in the class that might say, so how do you explain it to me? And he wants to push you to give an answer.
Yeah. Have you had this experience?
Not yet. But I think
have.
It could happen.
I have. Often, from adults who insist on an explanation.
Right.
So then with an adult, I can help them understand that it's an experiential thing, not an intellectual thing. And that they're really pulling themselves away from what it is that we're doing. But with a child, you need to do that a little bit more directly. Non-intellectually. In other words, with some kind of a game. When you're having a good time, that's key. When the ice cream tastes good, that's key.
Okay.
You know? They get that.
Okay.
You know, it's not untrue. Let's put it that way.
Thank you.
Yeah. Toi Sensei used to say, when you're hungry and you get food to eat, this is experiencing key of the universe. I would also add that when you hit your thumb with a hammer, that is also experiencing the key of the universe. It's not just pleasure, but pain. And when you start to open to this, what I'm talking about, then everything becomes as intense as hitting your thumb with a hammer. Okay, that's enough. 7 o'clock. Thank you all very much. Okay,